I think reaching out to people. So that's one thing. Folks are always happy for others to reach out to them. And it's something I wish I did a bit more of when I was trying to figure out what to do.
Welcome to Secrets of the City, the show where we uncover the stories behind the people who work in the highly lucrative yet enigmatic jobs of the City of London. I'm your host, Ayush Santalia.
And on the show today, we welcome Tariq Ismail. Tariq grew up in Harare, Zimbabwe, and is currently a corporate strategy manager at RELX. But prior to that, Tariq had a long stint in consulting. In fact, his career in consulting began even before university. Before starting at Oxford, where he studied engineering, Tariq spent a year at Accenture as part of a gap year program. He then joined Accenture full-time after university as a consultant for 3 years, and then moved to OC&C, where he joined the analytics division and was there for 2.5 years. But Tariq didn't always know that he was going to be a consultant. In fact, there were a few other options available to him at the time.
I was just looking at what's out there, and there was a few different things. I thought that I would do an engineering gap year scheme. And there's this scheme called the Year in Industry, where basically people before uni or even in the middle of uni do 1 year out. So I thought that I was going to do that, and I nearly basically signed up for one of those engineering placements. But then I looked what else is out there, and I think the Big Four do some schemes, Accenture and like the Bank of England even did a scheme, and I just had a look at those, and I thought that if nothing else, that'll give me different experiences, and since then I've been on the consulting train, but at that time I wasn't really sure that I wanted to do consulting. I just thought it's a really great opportunity to work in the city and to have a very different experience to what I would normally have doing engineering.
And once you finished that at university subsequently, were you then convinced that consulting was the career path for you, or did you explore other things as well, like a more pure engineering job maybe, or banking or something else, for example?
Actually, funny enough, after the second Accenture internship, I thought this is a lot of fun, but it's not going to be exactly what I want to do. And I started looking at engineering a bit more, but the more I looked into it, the more I realized that that wasn't actually what I wanted to do either. And then I actually had a conversation with somebody who worked in analytics at another consulting firm. And he described his job of doing a lot of modeling and a lot of very interesting, cool maths to try and find out the answer to a business problem. I think the example he gave was something like service and maintenance schedules for aircraft and trying to optimize them. And I thought, that's pretty interesting. And he was like, well, I mean, we spoke a bit about careers and stuff, and I told him I have an offer to go back to Accenture, and he said that, you know, that would be a perfect place to actually do it. So after exploring a bit, I realized that although traditional consulting may not have been the thing I wanted to do, there was this other door that had recently opened, and that's what I went for.
Nice. So yeah, let's talk a bit more about the analytics side of things. For people who don't know what analytics is within a consulting context, what exactly is it that is that you did at Accenture, and how is it different from the typical consulting path that the majority of people go down?
So at Accenture, it's pretty fluid. So you could end up on an analytics project. Everyone was put into one big group, and then you could end up on different projects. But in a nutshell, analytics is using a bit more than like summary statistics and sample data to come up with an answer to a business problem. So I guess the business problem is always what you're solving for. You're not really solving the technical problem of how to compute a certain regression faster or whatever. It's more, how can we use all of this data to come up with an answer that we may or may not have gotten to otherwise. So it's the use of data science and analytics, all the buzzwords, and apply them to business problems.
Yeah, so it's almost like a more, if I compare analytics consulting, if that's a phrase I've just made up, if I compare that to general consulting, it's almost like you answer the same questions that a normal consultant would answer. The difference is you do it using a much more data-driven and analytical approach versus what, you know, because you have skill sets, for example, that a normal consultant might not have. So you're able to add that extra layer onto the analysis and onto the work that you're doing for the same clients.
Exactly.
And what prompted you to switch? So from Accenture, where you were doing, as you said, you were in a pool of consulting where you did some analytics stuff, some general stuff. You then moved into OC&C where you were specifically in the analytics part of the business. What prompted that switch for you?
Yeah, so I mean, Accenture Analytics was great, and you know, I did a number of projects there. But I got myself onto a few retail strategy projects because of the data that was there. That was my gateway into those projects. And I realized that I liked those more than I liked the pure analytics ones. I think when I first joined, the hard technical problems, learning different programming languages, learning different statistical techniques, that's really what I sought. But after a little while, I realized that actually I prefer to be on the business side of things and to be solving the business problems. And also the way Accenture works, typically a lot of the technical work is done outside. It might be outsourced to India, or it might be outsourced to another part of the business. So it's a funny place in that sense. But I mean, somebody from OC&C reached out to say that they're building a team of folks who wanted to do strategy consulting, but who also had a strong analytical toolkit. And that really merged the two parts that I really wanted to do, which was focus on the business and the strategy side, but at the same time, hang on to some of those other skill sets that I've picked up along the way.
Got it. And how would you say Accenture and OC&C were different in a very general sense? I mean, on everything if possible, but you know, I guess we can go one by one as well if you want, but you know, in terms of like culture, the work that you were doing, work-life balance, you know, how did you compare the two of them?
Yeah, so a place like Accenture is huge, so it's slightly hard to generalize. They do things from, you know, big IT implementations to deals work, so it's a huge spectrum. But having said that, I think there's a few general things in my experience that I can pull out. The first, in terms of work, you generally work in smaller teams at OC&C versus Accenture. The projects on the whole are much shorter. The culture at a smaller place, it can be a lot more homogenous. And I think there's positives to that, but there's also negatives to that. Accenture again was huge, so you could find different pockets of people, and you know, you'd go to like Friday events and stuff, and every week, no matter how long you've been there, you'd meet somebody that you haven't met before. So it's almost like a world within itself. The work-life balance and the hours, so this is the biggest change I noticed. you work a lot longer hours at OC&C. I worked a lot longer hours at OC&C than I did at Accenture. By a lot.
What do you think was the driver of that?
I think the shorter projects definitely have an impact on that.
The shorter projects you did at OC&C, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. The shorter projects. So at OC&C, projects are shorter, meaning you've got, by definition, just less time to do things. I also think that OC&C has a culture of iteration, which I think is quite good. There's a lot more iteration. So you come up with an idea, or you come up with your first hypothesis, and then within 2 hours you test that with your manager, and then you get some feedback, you work on it again, and then within another few hours you test it with maybe the associate partner, and then the next day you're presenting to the partner. And that cycle is a lot shorter at OC&C and I suppose other strategy houses compared to some place like Accenture. I think that's probably the main driver.
Yeah, that's interesting actually, because one of the things that I, before I joined consulting at university, I wasn't aware of just how different the projects can be from firm to firm. And like you say, at a company like Accenture, or even at a company like McKinsey or BCG, where you typically have much longer engagements, and they'll be 3 months, 6 months, 12 months long. Whereas at a company like OC&C or LEK or, you know, CIL, some of the more boutique consulting companies out there, they often tend to be quite short in time period. And that naturally lends itself to slightly perhaps more intense projects on a day-to-day basis.
Yep, exactly. And the other thing is deals also help with that. or don't have, yeah. rather. That's something that I didn't do any of at Accenture.
Moving aside from OC&C and Accenture now, you moved to RELX now, I think, what, 2 years ago, maybe?
Yep, coming up to 2 years, yeah.
Coming up to 2 years, yeah. I mean, tell us a little bit more just generally first about RELX, the company, what it does, and then specifically your role within that.
RELX is a provider of information and analytics tools to B2B customers. And they operate in many sub-segments. So there's four major ones. The first one is science, technology, research and publishing, that sort of thing. Second one is in insurance, risk management, that sort of field. Mm-hmm. The third one is in the legal space. And they've got a fourth operating division, which is in exhibitions. And on the whole, they sell analytics tools, as I mentioned, and they help professionals do their jobs better.
Yeah. And what do you do for them?
So I'm in the corporate strategy team, I work, I guess, in the central team, and we do projects across all of the businesses. So this is a pretty big company, about 10 billion in revenue. So it's pretty big, and there's always different projects to be done across the business. And I mean, the projects range from pricing, analytics, product, general market entry, strategy stuff. So it's pretty broad.
So you sit across, your team sits across the four verticals that you described and would basically help out if the publishing division, for example, has a specific problem with pricing or with customer retention, they would bring you in to help out and help them figure out what the problem is and what a solution would be. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep. So they have their own strategy teams as well, and we often work alongside them, but there's certain projects that we do independent of them. One of the big advantages of the centralized model is that there's a lot of learnings across each of the businesses. RELX has grown organically as well as through acquisitions, and sometimes there's people in one segment who have no idea that they're facing the same problem as somebody in another segment. So someone in legal, someone who's trying to sell legal decision-making tools might actually have the same problem as somebody trying to work on medical decision-making tools. And only through people like people who can see both sides can we, you know, share best practices as well as kind of improve the overall answer.
Yeah, I find that actually really amazing, because I've worked on clients before where you have five different divisions and you see that someone has a problem in a certain division or something's happening there, and there is just no communication. It's the same company, but there's no communication between divisions, and they have no idea that there's someone who sits like a floor underneath them, yeah. having the exact same problem.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious, as a consultant, you come in and as a third party and you get to see that, and you're like, well, I mean, obviously I know why it happens, but it's just, it's sometimes a bit crazy to think that's just, when you have such a big business, that's a natural consequence, is that sometimes the communication may not necessarily be as smooth as it should be across teams.
Yep, exactly.
What kinds of, you mentioned you do all kinds of projects. What would be an example of, or I guess what's the, you know, the coolest thing that you've done in the last couple of years?
I did a pricing project pretty recently, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So I've learned a lot about pricing over the last little while, and I've realized that it's actually really hard to price something like software or data, because, and especially if it doesn't already exist in the market. So a lot of the times we're building products that don't really exist as of yet, so it's really hard to price them. And obviously you can't really use cost-based pricing, because your incremental cost is pretty much close to zero.
Sure.
So it has to be value-based, and I remember at OC&C doing other projects on value-based pricing where you kind of talk about it in quite an abstract way. Maybe you put it on a slide as a recommendation. But actually doing something like that is pretty cool and pretty interesting. So you try and understand what sort of value the customer can get from this product, and you price it according to that. And then it's really complicated in terms of how you package your product, what tiers you offer, how you sell it. Is it, do you sell it to the company? Do you sell it to the team? Do you sell it to an individual person? Is it, you know, at what level is the licensing? So there's so many factors to play around with. And yeah, I've learned a lot doing pricing.
That's cool. How did you actually determine the value to the customer? Was it a survey, interviews, just research?
Yep. So a lot of survey, the majority of it is survey work, and then follow up interviews. But even then, it's kind of hard to ask pricing questions. So you can use the Van Westendorp method. And even that is quite technically hard, because unless you describe to them exactly what the product does and exactly what value they're going to get out of it, everybody is going to assume a different thing from the product. So it's just a matter of actually getting that data and then researching it even further, maybe having follow-up chats with people to really understand what they do. But it's basically through talking to people. It's the simplest way of getting an answer.
Yeah, got it. And is there a team that you work with, or how big is the team that you work with on projects like this?
So the way projects work is actually very, it's very different to the consulting world. So let me talk about the team first. So the corporate strategy team, there's three of us. There's myself, another corporate strategy manager, and then we report to the chief strategy officer. But we've got a wider team that sit next to us, and there's a pricing and analytics team, and there's a product team. So that's kind of the wider team, just this and the setup. But in terms of how we work on projects, typically, the projects can be very different to consulting. So you typically work on your own project, where you're responsible for the timelines, you're responsible for the deliverables, and you have to essentially manage it from start to end. So you're working a lot more independently than you would normally. Now, in the case of this pricing project, I was lucky enough to work with a pricing expert who was on hand for a lot of the guidance. But essentially, that's the method that you use. So you've got yourself who's kind of driving the project, and then you lean on other people. So you lean on people more senior to you, and you use them as thought partners. And you lean on people who might be slightly more junior to help a lot with some of the ground and data work. So it's you do work in a team, but it's a very different setup to consulting.
If we just take a step back now and talk a little bit more about your transition into RELX from OC&C, what was the initial driver or decision process that you went through that led you to joining RELX? Why did you want to leave consulting, and what attracted you to the role that you're in today?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few reasons. I think consulting was great, and you know, you work, as we mentioned, you work pretty hard, and it's quite intense. And you work on projects for 2 to 3 weeks, and you come up with a great idea. You put it on an amazing deck of a slide deck, and then you move on. And then you do the same thing over and over again. And I think at some point I was confident that I'd mastered the core consulting skill set, and I wanted to move move past the slide deck. So I had an itch to do something a bit more tangible. And in terms of joining RELX, I've always been interested in the data and information space and the analytics space since graduating. And so it made a lot of sense from an industry perspective. And obviously there's other small things that, you know, when you interview with the team and you think that these are people that you could really learn from, these people that you could have a good time working with, I think that also adds a lot to the pull of a particular firm.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And how have you found it since moving to RELX in terms of, again, if we compare your current job to your previous roles at OC&C and at Accenture, how have you found it different? And how have you found it similar?
So yeah, I touched on the differences in terms of how the projects are run. So I'll just go through that again as well, just for completeness. So yeah, the work is a lot more independent, and you've got to manage your own projects and your own timelines. And you've got to drive pretty much all of the thinking and the process, and you can lean on people more senior to you for as thought partners. And that's kind of different to consulting, where generally a pace has already been set, and this is being driven top down rather than from you. So I'd say that's probably the biggest difference in terms of the work. I'd say in a project, you're kind of, because you're managing it and you're also doing a lot of the work for it, you kind of are at the center of it, whereas I think generally in the consulting world, well, I guess the partner would be driving a lot of that. I mean, the second big difference in terms of work is actually, we talked about going past the slide deck, and this has been pretty interesting for me, because you not only work on the strategy stuff, but you also have to think about how this is going to be implemented. You're obviously not responsible for the implementation, but you're working with people and you're consulting with people who will have to do that. And that's one thing I've realized, that in an external consulting world, you come up with the most amazing frameworks and, you know, watertight logic and all of that stuff. But the question is, can the person on the ground, can, for example, your salespeople or your marketing people or the people, the product folks, can they actually grasp that, and can they deliver it? Is it too complex for any organization? Is it, we mentioned, you know, some of these organizations are so big, and simplicity is often the key. Mm-hmm. So yeah, going past the slide deck has been a big change for me. And I think related to that, a big thing is that you work with a larger range of people. So in consulting, you'd often work for the C-suite, and you'd work maybe closely with like a commercial lead or something. In a corporate, I find myself working with people from all across the business, as I mentioned, you know, from sales, from product, from marketing, from legal. So it's a real range of people that you have to work with. And I think that's obviously very true of the wider world in general, in that it's, to get things done, a lot of people have to be contributing. So yeah, those are the three big things I found on the work side. From like a non-work side, you probably don't need to hear me say this, but the work-life balance is a lot better at a corporate. And I mean, socially, it's actually been pretty hard to measure, because I joined in the middle of COVID, and we're still not yet back to full-time office working. Mm-hmm. But having said that, we still do things as a team. We do like, you know, virtual meetings and stuff, and like where we meet up to do like team days out and stuff. So it's pretty good. The one thing that you don't get, obviously, is like the midnight coffee meets with your friends and stuff. And I think I'm probably okay without them.
Did you find that your experiences in consulting have helped you in your current job?
Consulting experience definitely helps in corporate strategy roles. Firstly, I wouldn't be able to get this role without any solid consulting experience. And secondly, all the skills are actually still relevant here. So it's very similar to consulting, but you've just got a bit more ownership, and you're in contact with the project for a lot longer. So you might do your initial phase, but still you know might be a few months later, might be a year later, you're still talking to the same people that you did the project for, because they might have follow-up questions, the market may have evolved, and you know, generally both sides have an incentive to keep up the thinking on the project. So it's an evolving thing rather than just a one-off. But no, 100%, without a few solid years in consulting, it would be pretty hard to go into one of these roles.
And we touched upon it a little bit just now, but what's the progression right like at RELX? So what are the next steps for you, for example, if you wanted to stay around for the next 10, 20 years?
So it's quite similar to a lot of other corporate strategy roles in that there's actually nowhere to go.
Is the reason I ask is because one of the questions I often get asked from students and listeners is, in consulting, it's a very well-defined career path. You start off as an associate or an associate consultant, and then you get promoted, and then you get promoted to manager, and then you get a couple more years, and then you're partner, right? And it's very well-defined. You know that if you were to stick around for 10 years, you'll probably be a partner Whereas in a corporate job, it's a little bit less like that. It's often dead man shoes type thing, which means you have to wait for someone to leave before you can actually move into the next position. Is it? Yeah. So, which is why I asked the question to see whether you have found that's the case and how that plays out in terms of your personal motivations and aspirations.
Yeah. So in the corporate team, you've got myself and the person I report to is the CSO, and there's a few levels in reality between me and the CSO. So there's actually no way of me climbing up within the corporate strategy team. So that's done by design. So they get people from a lot of these consulting firms and banks to come to work in the central team. And it's like a springboard into other parts of the business. So you come here, you work for about 2 to 3 years, and you get to know the business, you get to know different parts of the business, and then you move into one of those roles. So folks sometimes go into the strategy team off one of the businesses, but actually a lot of them do something else. So a lot of them go into things like product, a lot of them go into marketing, some even go into growth and sales. So those are all viable options. I'm still at that stage where I'm exploring before making a decision of where to end up. Just answering your second question, in terms of progression in corporates, I think once you're actually in one of the businesses, it's a lot more defined, where you've got certain levels, and if you do a good job, you get promoted. That's one of the good things about working in an industry that's always growing. There's always a lot of opportunity for promotion and progression.
Got it. And that's an interesting model where you join in the strategy team, for example, and then, as you say, you use it as a springboard to bounce into another part of the business. I think that could work really well, especially if you, once you learn about the business, you'll also be able to decide, I'm interested in the publications part of it, or I'm really interested in the digital part of it, or whatever it ends up being.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's quite a similar model to a lot of the other corporates, especially. So there were a few folks who left OCNC roughly the same time as I did, who all went into corporate strategy roles, and most of them have a similar sort of setup where you do something for a few years and then you move on into one of the businesses. And I think it works really well. I think it's a good way of learning and adapting to a different style of working, and also just getting your hands dirty with actual work.
Yeah, exactly. Final question, any advice that you would give to younger Tariq, maybe Tariq pre-Accenture, pre-university, anything you've learned in the last 10, 15 years that you think would be helpful for you to have known when you were younger?
Pre-Accenture, this takes me back to school days.
Exactly.
I think reaching out to people. So that's one thing. Folks are always happy for others to reach out to them. And it's something I wish I did a bit more of when I was trying to figure out what to do. I was trying to make a decision with not much information. Whereas, if I just reached out to people by LinkedIn or sent them an email, or got in touch any other way, and asked them about their work, asked them about what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, just what they do, I think that would have given me a lot more information on the different types of industries. It's much more valuable to do that than to try and research something by yourself. And often, you don't get the full picture by researching things by yourself. Talking to people. Second thing, probably take more risks. And maybe sending an email, a cold email to somebody, is taking a risk. Or maybe once you've emailed them, asking them to meet up, that is a risk. But without taking that risk, you don't get the payoff.
I love it. Yeah.
Those are the couple of things I'd probably tell myself.
That was Tariq on the latest episode of Secrets of the City. If you like the show, please remember to hit subscribe on the podcast and like our Facebook page and LinkedIn page. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you next time.